Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. On this brisk April 14th morning. Now, you guys know I record these and then I release them sometimes many weeks later, sometimes some months later. So maybe I'll just start saying the date in the beginning and that I won't have to score the front credit with it. How many of you remember the old movie called The Secret? How many of you remember the movie before that called What the Bleep Do We Know? For those of you who didn't see either, The Secret was the last one to be released. And it starts off by telling you that what if the elite of the world understood that projecting what you want to have happen in this universe is the way to get it done. In a positive realm, you simply will it, and through law of attraction, it happens. Okay? Now, The Secret was really about the universe sort of obeying your law of attraction. And I very much believe in this. And not because of wishful thinking or crystal hugging or any of that kind of stuff. But we're going to get into this. What the Bleep Do We Know was at a much more detailed scientific level, talking about things like neural peptides. But What the Bleep Do We Know was more focused on you and yourself crafting a vision of your world and then becoming that more on a personal level than controlling the outside world. But both were sort of pushing towards the same end. We control many aspects of the universe. Now, it was either my existentialism episode or it was on my law of attraction video where I opened with the phrase, what if the greatest secret in the universe is that you control it? If you watch my other episode on consensus reality, and that's a more homogeneous socialistic model, or social model, I should say, of the theory, which is this world and everything in it is an amalgamation of all of our consciousness put together, and it's the average mean of where we are in the universe. There's a lot of things that suggest that as well, and we're going to get into this. But here's what's interesting about my own experience with What the Bleep Do We Know and The Secret. It never occurred to me until just recently, and this is probably foolish on my part. What can be used for good can be used for evil. But now, some of you might think, well, now, wait a minute, what are you saying here? That the world goes bad because there's more bad people than good people? But what if, and I have no exact proof of this, but there are certain things that I've mentioned in previous episodes, and those of you who are hardcore listeners, this is going to be a beautiful like episode that surmises tons of previous episodes along these lines. Now, some people think, I mean, quite literally, that they're witches and that they can hold a little seance in a basement and sacrifice some poor kid ripped off by the Clinton Foundation out of Haiti. And their little ritual with all the, worm's wort and, frog's tails can change the world to be however they want. Not convinced myself. But I don't think you need that kind of stuff. If what we think is going to happen is all it takes to make it happen, whether it be we feel like something bad's going to happen and then something bad manifests out of our collective consciousness, but we don't know what it is, then it's still very effective, isn't it? Marsha McLuhan, as I've mentioned several times, because I want you to be able to mention it, one of my secrets of making episodes is to strategically repeat things that I'm not hearing from the public so that you can start to have it as muscle memory. not trying to brainwash you, because I don't think you're going to repeat anything you don't believe. And I think that all of you who are hardcore listeners, you do your own research and you make up your own mind. I'm merely a presentation of possibilities. But Marshall McLuhan invented the word as used today called media. As the Rastafarians say, media. I love that. He said that it's more important to recognize how you're getting information versus the information that you actually get. And I think what he was trying to say, because in his lifetime, this dude lived like 99 years or something, or 100 years or something, man, the dude lived forever. He was an American philosopher. His counterpart was the Canadian Frenchman, Jean Baudrillard, both amazing men, both amazing thinkers. But Marshall McLuhan saw, and he was born in the, I believe in the era, he may have actually been born prior to the radio. One of the greatest interviews you can read from Marshall, and buckle up, baby, if you think you've got an intellectual mind. The stuff I always talk about, Jean Baudrillard's little teeny tiny books. I mean, they're teeny tiny. One page is like a 7-course meal, and they're big dishes, okay? Marshall McLuhan, same exact thing. But his 1968 Playboy interview, which you can see online, is just mind-blowing. You have to read it if you care about anything I'm saying today. But he sees the news go from a newspaper right at the cusp of like massive yellow journalism conversion. Then he sees the radio and he's watching. He's a thinker. Talk about a deep thinker. If he made a show, it'd be The Deepest Thoughts Radio. And then he sees television and he sees movies overlaid on top of all that. He watched war propaganda movies do their thing. He watched commercials manipulate people. And so he understood that the more realistic the media becomes, the more dangerous it is to indoctrinate man. We all know this now. Look at deep fake. I just rewatched the, Bill Hader? I guess his name, right? He's the impersonator. He used to be on SNL, but he was on the Conan O'Brien show. And he impersonates Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they did a deep fake switch on him that every time he started the impersonation of Arnold Schwarzenegger, they did the most meticulous deep fake of his face turning into Schwarzenegger. I mean, it looked like he was just stretching his face. It was crazy, but it was the deep fake. It was so well done that even with my background, someone clicked on the video before I got to see the title, and then you can't see the title after it starts playing on the TV. I thought he was torquing his face like Jim Carrey. Because Hader is that talented. I just thought, oh my God, like he even looks like him. Plus, it makes him look older and more regal. And so I was thinking, hey, maybe his face is getting different, you know? Nope, it was deep fake. So let's go back to the beginning of this episode. If we control the universe within our own sphere of influence, right? Then all we need to do is quarantine ourselves from outer contributions and then think how we want our universe to go. And most of us can't do it because it's a lot to think about. I mean, right now I'm sitting outside. If I wanted it to snow, well, how do I even have that thought? You know, it's like the dude in American Gods. I mean, do I just conceive of snowflakes popping out of nowhere? Probably. Don't know. But most of us don't live like hermits. Most of us have circles of influence. And so because that's the case, we're mixing with everybody else. You know, right now, I have a memory of every place I've ever been, probably past the age of 7. Meticulous, like I know where the bedrooms were, you know, what the houses look like, what my hometown looks like, what the little couple towns in Massachusetts I lived in, and in Albuquerque where I've been before, and all these other places. I still remember them. And so in my mind, I'm inserting them into my reality as the way they were, the way last I saw them. But there's also people living there, changing it, making decisions to improve things or leave things alone. And so my consciousness would be mixing with their consciousness. To the degree they change something, maybe I'm being influenced without even thinking about it. And let me make another kind of esoteric analogy here. For those of you who are familiar with remote viewing, and I did an episode on it, if you care to dive into it. The idea is that an individual could be put into a room, they're given longitude and latitude coordinates, and without ever being there, they can meditate and see it, which would be sort of a godlike eye from a video game looking down on a map and then drawing what they see, all the way to the point where they were said to be able to look at writing on a piece of paper inside of an envelope clear around the world, or even the more coast-to-coast versions, they can see planets from, you know, way out there in the universe. Okay. What if that's all we're doing when we think about past places? We're looking down on them. And so whatever they decide to make it is the way we see it. They're architecting it where they are because they're closer to it in proximity. And all I'm doing is staring down into their consciousness and seeing my hometown, however it is. Okay. So let's create a fake little study in our Deep Thoughts College. We want to explore this. And so we get some volunteers to spend perhaps maybe an extended period of time, perhaps 6 months. We're going to make a chill, you know, reality show pad for them. Everything they need. Everyone's pre-qualified to get along because we're all Deep Thoughts Radio people. And they agree to be influenced. And so what we're going to do is say you can have the news feed just to kind of keep yourself entertained while you're in this quarantine. But what we don't tell them is that the news is completely fake. We're making it in another studio. And so we create either a positive bunch of news or a bunch of negative news. We manipulate like the old video game from EA we made called Majestic. You signed up to have your email, your fax at the time, your cell phone would get called, your home phone would get called, and we terrorized you with a sort of X-Files scenario. This game really existed, and then it was turned off. It was an absolute propaganda machine that we made. It was brilliant, utterly brilliant. But we start messing with everyone who signs up for 6 months. And to make sure we don't really get anyone damaged, maybe we go for the positive side of things just to see what happens. When they come out in 6 months, we see what kind of people they are. We see what they've done with a bunch of resources that we put in their space. Maybe they all become so extremely happy that they all become exactly who they want to be. We put art and music in there and just everything, every single hobby you could possibly have is in there to keep them beautifully entertained. And because we inject positivity in the room, it's all good. But let's say we have two other chambers that are doing the exact same thing. In one case, it's the control group. We do nothing to them. We feed them real news, real information. Maybe we ask them to limit their communications with actual individuals and loved ones on the outside just to keep it controlled. But in the other one, we do like that old Twilight Zone episode where the guy lured everyone in the bomb shelter where he had rigged a fake nuclear bomb going off outside because he wanted to torture three people that tortured him when he was young. However we do it, we create some sort of catastrophe. Maybe a pandemic would be nice because then, you know, well, it's not nice, but it's like, it's not like there's a nuclear holocaust outside, but they're like, you know, I'm so glad I'm in this chamber here because I'm extra safe. I just happened to be in here when this thing spread. But we just keep feeding negativity and negativity in there. I'm willing to bet that after 6 months, if they could even last that long without trying to hurt each other, you might have the dark room where everyone's in fetal positions, stressed to the nines, which would be unethical to actually conduct that experiment. The positive folks we would probably have a few albums. We might have a bunch of works of art, maybe some inventions, and maybe a few marriages with some pregnant people, you know? And the neutral group, well, probably be just what we have today. I'm starting to suspect this is much deeper than an involuntary system whereby humans just sit around and create the universe. Now, I'm always mentioning, you know, No Country for Old Men as a theory that I understand. Standards change, music changes, and so a person from the past can feel very alienated in the future. And this used to be the case from, you know, people who grew up in really tumultuous times in the United States, entering an era that is wonderful, and they still feel like the world is not theirs anymore, and they dislike it, and they don't like the music, and they don't like the entertainment and all that other kind of stuff, when de facto we've got, you know, cars instead of horse and carriage, we've got electric appliances instead of having to wash your clothes on a board, we've got radio where we can transmit, you know, entertainment. But they still feel alienated and upset with the way that things changed. Well, having sort of this ritual that I have with older people, especially when I was young, I have been asking older people about the times when they grew up. You know, what was it like when you were a kid? And then I file that away into the 40s, the 30s, the 50s, the 60s, etc. Now, in every decade that's around, there's usually something negative that occurs within that decade. In my research, the only decades that we have of the 20th century, meaning the last century, where things were really exploding, probably was the 1920s, because the World War I had concluded. Now, we did have a Spanish flu that ended right around the 1920 realm. But the 20s were pretty much okay until 29, when the stock market crashed, right? So almost the whole decade was good. The 40s had World War I. The 50s had the Korean War plus the nuke scare. The 60s had Vietnam. 70s had half Vietnam. But the 80s were clean. The 80s were totally clean. And, you know, Britain had the Falkland Islands thing, and we had Iran-Contra. There's always a scandal, but it's nothing like a world war. The 90s, well, almost clean. We had Saddam Hussein for the Americans. But things got kind of weird in the 90s, right? The culture went super dark right after that Iraq thing. Totally unrelated, I think. But it seemed to have hatched an agenda whereby things were being guided towards a darker realm. The gang violence in Los Angeles alone was terrifying. I mean, it was really an epidemic of everyone freaked out about drive-by shootings and all kinds of other stuff. Music really got dark. The white kids who had silver spoons in their mouths from the moment they're born are trying to pretend like they're poor. And the kids in the ghettos are trying to, having just sort of exposed a lot of the drug trade in the ghettos from the 80s, were then suddenly endorsing it as a method on how to live. It was guns, violence, you know, calling each other's names and all this other stuff. Not good. First decade of the 21st century, we have 9/11. We have a war on terror, unknown enemy, a recession that was horrible. And then in the second decade of this century, we did really, really well. Big economic boost, real estate boost. And then 2008, they basically blew a hole in the bottom of the boat, which we are still reeling from today before this latest catastrophe that's going on. The reason why I mention this is I think if you pay attention to media, all the way back to, say, the 1910s, you know, Charlie Chaplin's getting out there and making movies. We have those in control, because every war we have to attribute to those in control. They passed the 16th Amendment in the United States. They kill Franz Ferdinand, trying to get us dragged into a world war. The Roaring Twenties were, again, pretty good until the crash of the stock market. The 30s, they took all of our gold away, got a massive depression. The 40s has half the decade spent worried about a world war, fighting the Pacific Rim with Japan, Atlantic Rims with the Germans. Things looked good. Baby boomer happened after the war. By 1954, poof, we're in the middle of this Korean War. Now, it's very easy for us to simply say that there is no sort of law of attraction in the universe because everything I just mentioned to you was heavily orchestrated. And that would be true, that Franz Ferdinand is murdered, Hitler is built up, Theodore Roosevelt's a shill. Korean War was started by the French. They boogied out of town and we're stuck with it. Vietnam's created by the French. They boogie down. We have to deal with it. And then other things happen, right? Saddam Hussein asked for permission to invade Kuwait. We say yes. He does it. The Saudis get pissed. Then we have to go get him out of there, but we don't kill him because we realize we did give him permission to do it. And I think just in retrospect, as a small footnote, you know, it was said several times that he was a CIA asset. And I think that if that's the case, they wanted to keep him in their back pocket in case the Saudis got out of control and they would simply have Saddam roll over Saudi Arabia. It's a cynical thought, but I don't put it past these evil people to keep a bunch of people in check by, you know, having everyone in their back pocket. 9/11, well, give me a break. It's an inside job beyond your wildest dreams. All the financial collapses we have ever had, ever, totally and 1,000% orchestrated since the 16th Amendment was falsely ratified in 1913. But now here's the thing. We have a couple things happening, which is very interesting. Now, during almost every single crisis, say past the introduction of acid into the mainstream, about 63, the world was behind, or I should say, sorry, excuse me. I have to apologize for being an American. America was 100% behind the Korean War for dumb reasons, okay? You know, threat of communism, blah, blah, blah. I mean, yeah, whatever. I am glad that at least we saved South Korea, but World War II, well, whole planet was behind that except for the Nazis and a few neutral countries. Japan had, you know, allied with the Germans after the Nanking massacre, and, you know, Germany was helping Japan in certain methodologies of endorsement, but most of the world was behind that, you know, defeating this regime of the Third Reich. And so there are these major circumstances that occur that create a polarization within the society, you know, and again, up until the 60s, where people did some research and said, what are we doing in Vietnam again? You know, they didn't know the Gulf of Tonkin incidents, the two of them, never occurred. They believed that that actually occurred. I'm pretty sure there was no one outside the military that knew that that was fake until much, much later. But they knew better than to send people over to die for some bizarre little region of the world that should have been left alone to fight it out by themselves. And I don't think anyone could say that South Korea wouldn't have survived without the United States' help at all. I think they could have easily have divided the two. But you never know. Today, it wouldn't have worked that way, right? Without South Korea having an ally, North Korea would roll over them in 2 seconds. Just like all that K-pop we wouldn't be missing, you know? We wouldn't have Gundam style, you know, it'd be a bummer. But what I'm really talking about, because I want to acknowledge that in case you guys make a valid point about those, you know, induced situations, which do cause very, very clear cause and effect reaction, equal and opposite reaction effects to our lives that are very negative. Anyone who loses their family member in war could lecture us about the realities of banker systems creating wars to create money borrowing, which is their leverage over us, right? You know, the more I hear about this national debt thing, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Just so you know, someone says, well, you know, the national debt, they're trying to take advantage, they're trying to take control of the conversation through sort of this, well, you know, there's the boogeyman, you know, you got to behave because of the boogeyman. It's like, ugh, debt's in your brain. Okay. Now, between individuals, debt is very real. I don't owe any other human being money besides some employees that we all got screwed when this dude screwed me a bunch of money. But other than that, if I borrow money from somebody, I've always paid it back. Always. But there is a much deeper sort of consciousness that we carry within our mind and our heart. And I want to get this episode out during our current ridiculous lockdown. Because regardless of how much you're trying to search for the truth or not search for the truth, there are sort of core feelings we have in our chest about whether or not we're living in a world that is going to benefit us at some point if we work hard, or no matter how hard we work, nothing's ever going to work out. It's sort of your hope and despair meter. How much do you have of each? Now, I think we have the choice to throw away those paradigms and those metrics and simply say, we conquer our destinies, not other people, but we conquer our destinies. That's all we do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a war. There's a pandemic. There's this latest scare thing going on. Nah, not my problem. If I can help, I'll help. But I got to take care of number one, first and foremost, and I can benefit anyone in need better if I'm more successful. So what this gets down to, if this were true, let's just go in that route right away. In my opinion, we get back to Marshall McLuhan's caution to the world. Be careful what medium you use to get information. For any of you that have been burned by a photoshopped photo where they're trying to say, you know, this person was at this particular meeting when they weren't, you went out and told your friends, you passed a photograph around or whatever. And then you get burned and you're like, oh my God, you know, that wasn't true. You know what it's like. The medium looks so real to you that you passed it around. How many of you have seen a friend link something in Facebook where they're like, oh my God, look at this. This is amazing. And it's either a UFO landing somewhere, not really landing, but flying around, or it's the, what was it? I can't remember. I think this guy was Norwegian or something. The dude that made the animation of the theme park with all the fake rides. He did this amazing CG where he just created these amazing rides that were, they didn't exist in real life, but he moved it just fast enough and just slow enough and just fast at the right speed that it looked absolutely photoreal. I mean, as far as lighting is concerned and the models, they were perfect. And I guess that guy contacted Sid and they said that he ended up working for Neil Blomkamp. So that makes sense. But you see things and you pass it around like it's real. So what are our options if we wanted to take measures to better weed out information? I just had a chance to go through a ton of comments on the Facebook, or sorry, on the YouTube channel. I apologize for not getting back to you guys. And there's a bunch of you that deserve responses. But here's what's most valuable to me. And there could be shilly people in there, but no one's really claiming anything outrageous, so it seems very believable. But as you folks report in from your area of the world, it's very enlightening to essentially have like a slice of truth from a particular country, right? You know, in England, we're doing this, and I live in this particular town. Well, I live in London, and I live in, you know, wherever, Madrid, Hanover, Rome, Paris, whatever. That's very valuable. So I have friends that are very stern, very strong. They're like pillars, and you could, you know, it's like running up to them and shouting in their face, and they just don't even move. You don't even know if they have an emotion. And then I have friends where you could just smile funny and they think the sky is falling. panic 24/7, man. Can't get out of it. Okay, so given our theory of creating the universe for yourself, and part of it has to do with your perception of the universe, right? You could see someone and say, oh my God, that's the worst person on planet Earth. What happens with Trump all the time? People who have done no research in the Bilderberg Group, the Bohemian Grove, Club 300, the Council on Foreign Relations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Trump is one of them, man. It's like, okay, dude, well, produce one photo where he's ever been at these functions where they determine how the world's going to go, who's going to be president, chancellor, prime minister, and maybe I'll entertain your thinking. But again, they're having a Pavlovian response. Something in their past is causing them to just earmark a person one way or another. It happens with everyone, you know, with everyone else. You know, that guy seems slimy to me. I got a real negative vibe off him or it or this action, this thing. I don't know if we should be doing this or I should be doing this. If the media, let's just say the world gets another 80s decade. Fantastic music relative to this time, not relative to the 80s. Bunch of great musicians, great movies, great art, all uplifting. Remember, all the 80s rap was all about getting out of the ghetto and building your life up and being nice to people. And it's just what it was all about. It was a bunch of social lessons. Remember Run DMC, you talk too much. It was about the social training of like etiquette. Hey, dude, talk for a little second and then shut up. Let someone else talk. And then you talk, you know, it's a process we go through. It's not something that some parents teach kids. That's what Run DMC was making a joke out of. That's cool. What is it? White Lines, Grandmaster Flash, and the other dude saying, get off cocaine, it'll screw you up. Don't do it, right? Let's say we get another decade like that. Everything's going great. Back to the Future happens again, something like that. And then the globalists, who are all about misery and control, because misery is what they live in and control is what they don't have, which they really want. Because for them, again, control for them only is satisfied if they have absolute control. It's beyond narcissism. It is, I don't know. I don't even know if these people are human, you know, but they control nowadays all the press, right? They control all the shows that get created for Netflix, HBO, and the movie theaters. They control it all. They modify your scripts to put in weird stuff sometimes. Okay. But they make a plan, and they take a while to make plans. You know, they'll work 20 years on something. They don't care. And then they make a strategic decision. Now, in the past, what I have seen is a slow erosion of societal standards to make sure that it sort of infects us over time. And I'll tell you, you know, one of the mechanisms we need to get rid of, and it's sort of organically happening. This may sound like a technicality, but keep this in your mind. This is something I see every single day in my life, right? When it comes to making movies or television, the costs are so outrageous that it allows them with money to control it. But is it really necessary? I mean, there are laptops out there. I think, you know, quite frankly, I think almost every single laptop that exists today that's manufactured, even a $1,000 laptop, it'd take a while. But we actually have the muscle and the power to make and shoot and color correct and edit any story that we can come up with as citizens. We need to find decent actors and decent writers. But in terms of making something, you know, have a special effect or, you know, be on the moon or whatever, well, green screen and blue screen, what is it? It's a wall painted green and blue. Just light it evenly. You can do a cloth. You can do a true green screen. You can make anything happen. People do it all the time. But if you want to get distribution, oh my God, you got to go kiss somebody's ass to get your movie distributed among all these streaming services. Well, there comes the control, the monopoly on what you see. Well, what was the new frontier? The new frontier was YouTube. You know, Google Video tried to exist for a little while, but man, talk about not understanding video streaming services. YouTube knocked it out of the park. For a good 10 years, it was unbelievably a new frontier of information. 2 or 3 years ago, the deep state moved in and started censoring because they were being exposed at an alarming rate. And they still are being exposed at an alarming rate. And I mean, amazingly alarming rate. So there's all these apparatus in place to make sure that what you see is governed, which is why we like things like BitChute. But now, if you're able to be influenced, then it goes inside your brain. I talk about this every once in a while in episodes, but there's this fetish with perverts. They play a game called I Made You Look. Let's say that, you know, you're aware of negative things that happen in this world. If a child disappears, and then you find out later in the news that their body was found somewhere and it was violated, you know, as an adult, I can only imagine what happened to that kid. This is the most awful thing, and we have to change society, right? Now, the perv actually derives from this content in large numbers nowadays, right? Used to be way back before all this happened, it would be a bizarre parental situation. Somebody drops their kids into foster care and there happens to be a bad foster care parent and all hell can break loose for them, right? But let's just say you have a normal family. None of that's happening in your circle. You don't know anyone who's ever lost a child to these Podesta kind of people. But now you're going to watch a television show. Something on Netflix. Maybe it's a cop worship show, some murder mystery thing, NCIS show, CIS show. And it's very tough to write those episodes over and over and over again, right? I mean, think about it. You're pumping out shows once a week for years and years and years, and they put them in all different regions of the world. Walking Dead had this problem. Or they make a movie that has got a franchise that you love, some superhero that you love. But in order to create a nemesis, an antagonist, because they've all been done a million times now, they go for some super dark stuff. Because we don't have a clear methodology to establish a kind of a rite of passage, where a boy can prove that he's a man by being tough, right? Used to be, okay, well, you're going to hunt the lion now. You're going to run off to some war or something and get a chance to show that you are both honorable patriot, but you're also capable of staring a lion in the face and killing it, right? Which is really strange. Like eating a lion seems like the strangest thing on earth. But because that doesn't exist, music became a huge outlet. You got rock and roll. Back in my time frame, it was about becoming a man through learning an instrument, or at least, you know, you just pick things. You gave away your toys and you gave away your BMX bicycles and you got yourself a hot rod and then you fixed it up. You learned how to work the engine and the suspension and you went and worked at whatever store you worked at and you bought the new back tires that are bigger and all this other stuff. And then it became gangsterism. Kids feeling the genetic push to become adults. Just a genetic thing to take over the decision-making process for their life, which is the rite of passage moment. But instead of having an outlet to do that, they get in trouble. And trouble is what it's all about. And again, almost every single one of these guys in LA that have been head of like the Crips or the Bloods or whatever, or they're massive pimps or whatever, they all relax typically in the end. It's interesting. I just watched a new documentary about the Yakuza gang members and other gang members, the Spectre gang in Japan. And all these like 15, 16 year olds riding motorcycles around old 80s and 70s motorcycles from America and from over there. And it was, you know, they'd have bats and things because they can't have guns over there. It's just very interesting. This phenomenon happens everywhere except in the jungle, where rite of passage still exists. either in South America or Africa, maybe even Australia, the Aborigine, although they're fairly modernized now. And so we are lured genetically towards some difficulty to prove ourselves. And I think that there's a lot of folks that are completely aware of this that don't mean us well. And so they know there's a susceptibility, a vulnerability when a boy is becoming a man. And if you don't have a strong father in your life and you're a man, you're a boy, excuse me, and you become a man, your father doesn't like say, okay, we're going to go fishing, we're going to go hunting, we're going to fix the old car, you're going to help paint the house, I'm going to teach you how to do all these things, keep you preoccupied. Hey, my dad did all that and taught me electronics and a bunch of other stuff. I had uncles teaching me physics and drawing and all this other stuff. So I was totally preoccupied. I didn't have to do anything crazy. But I went through my little gangster era, which this is a laughable tongue-in-cheek thing, when the movie Warriors came out. You know, as a little nine-year-old, you know, we didn't get any fights or anything like that, but we started stealing and vandalizing. We were like little droogies without the physical harm part of it, or cars, or Milk Plus. So it's not enough just to say, okay, we have to police our minds carefully to make sure that we don't get infected with nasty algorithms. Remember the movie Seven with Brad Pitt and Kevin Spacey? For those of you who didn't see it, yeah, I believe there's seven murders, but boy, whatever, you know, was it Clive Barker? Is that his name? The dude that did the Hellraiser series and all that stuff. Just some crazy demonic shit. You know, the way these people were murdered in the movie Seven, it set a new bar and gore in a movie. Now, we had Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like that were little cult movies on the side. But man, in terms of mainstream, everybody saw it. They made you look. And as you see this, you become desensitized to it. But at the same time, you don't see it and not fear it at a subconscious level. Because as I said in my last episode, you know, the id, as Freud talks about it, it's this chaotic, kind of uncontrollable part of your center core. And what if it is literally, you know, it's not a real thing necessarily, right? He's just trying to wrap a metaphor around that internal part of our chaos that we don't completely understand when we're trying to control our vessel, right? But if you insert deep down inside a moment of terror, which is what PTSD is all about, PTSD is not just for soldiers. It's for anyone who experiences trauma. What's really interesting about PTSD today is we have matured, given it a name, figured out what it is. It's a lost moment of chaos, which is you were getting into a nasty situation. You have an IED blow up underneath your Humvee and you didn't die, but your friends are in pieces. And the fact that you live gives you guilt. You have this moment you can't remember because your short-term memory for 10 minutes is erased during traumatic situations, but you really did remember it. And so it just haunts you in the middle of the night. People are beat up by their parents or parental bodies. They compartmentalize while they're being beat, but that darkness goes inside of us. And then when we compartmentalize out, which is MKUltra's entire platform, we're broken until we can go in and get that thing and then pull out that gooey thing and throw it away. So I'll just call them the deep state. They want to hatch an agenda to erode our ability to get along. You know, what's really strange is, and I've mentioned this in several different ways, but to see a race riot in the United States of America in the 21st century is sort of baffling to me. Not that, you know, law enforcement has an issue with an area. That's different. That's law enforcement. But just natural citizens not getting along. Because in my mind, what I don't understand is that in the 70s and the 80s, we were getting along just fine. And then all of a sudden, the 90s, it was like, when, especially being in Los Angeles, I don't know about other regions, but there was a lot of drug wars, and drugs was the, you know, was the exclusive reason why these wars were occurring in most cases. You know, even a territorial war is about who's going to sell drugs in a particular area. Well, because our intelligence agencies were targeting the ghettos, when people in Los Angeles who didn't live in the ghettos were seeing the news and being terrified that they were going to be a victim of a drive-by, because they were driving by cars on the 405 and just shooting them up as an initiation thing. Didn't happen as much as it felt like it was happening, but it did happen. And so we had a little bit of like, oh gosh, everybody else of all colors is fearing these kids of these, you know, more specific colors. And it was building up, you know, tension, all orchestrated by drug sales being brought in from South America and Afghanistan, right? But we were getting along great before all that, outside of these ghetto areas that were victimized. So imagine, let's put ourselves in their boardroom, and they're going to hatch some evil into the world to infect our minds and get us to believe that we have problems that we don't actually have. They're going to get us to be, let's say one of their goals was to create more racial tension. Let's say that they wanted us to feel hopeless. Let's say they wanted husband and wife to hate each other. Let's say they wanted kids to hate their parents as quickly as possible. Well, just think about it. Every objective that they have only has to become a plot and a story on television, a plot and a movie. And then they're going to try to create case studies whereby they tell their news agencies, okay, you know, you guys pick any story you want to cover that you think is important. Yes. Okay. Here's what you're going to do. Here's a list of themes that we want you to promote to the tippy top. You do it, you keep your job. You don't do it, you're let go. And the editors and chiefs of every news organization, whether it be broadcast, internet, or paper, magazines, whatever, there's always a head of state making all the decisions about what they cover. As a reporter, you're trying to cut your teeth. You're trying to make a name for yourself. You want to write a cover article. You know, that's where you get the big accolade in magazines, is to say, hey, I work for Time Magazine and I did 2 cover articles. So the cover of the magazine is your article. They will do anything to get that. Some people believe strongly in like Grammys and Oscars. And so they do anything to cater to get the statue, when art itself denies that entire intent. Let's not forget, those are control apparatuses, right? Well, if you want that statue, you better knock all that cursing out on your song. So they hatch brilliant writers into these themes. And I mean brilliant writers. Let's say you wanted kids to hate their parents. Well, you can't just make a show necessarily where kids just wake up one day and then all of a sudden look at their parents and they look like ghouls, and so they hate them or kill them or whatever. That'd be too on point, as they say in writing. They would create some perhaps narcissistic parents, some parents that are not hip. You know, they stuck back in their youth and didn't engage the world that their children are actually engaging in. It'd be really subtle. And they probably spend a first 30 minutes of a 2-hour movie building up to this big arc where the kid finally rebels at the first act, and then they're off to do something nuts. They hatch the plan. They're the Menendez brothers or something, right? Abusive parents. And so they're going to kill them. Mom's blamed for letting dad do crazy things to his son, supposedly. All of which may or may not be true. In that particular case, I mentioned this to you in the past, but I want to put it on point now, because we're sort of talking about this predictive programming, theme-based engineering of humanity. Now, predictive programming is obviously the weird game that they play where they inject something into a Simpsons episode that then becomes real. And it's very scary when you see that happen, because you're thinking, oh my God, is my whole life a movie? You know, you don't want that to be the case. Trust me. Unless maybe our director is like Wes Anderson or something. So I grew up with grandparents that died together. All of them. Whether or not my grandmother got remarried after my grandfather died, which happened, she stayed with him until the very end. He was 60 years old and she was 58 when he died. My other grandparents, I think one was 76 and one was 79 because he died earlier than her. Okay. They died together. Now, my generation, the next one down, the baby boomers, are almost all categorically divorced. When my parents got divorced, it was sort of like, oh, this is weird. I mean, I don't care if they do, but all my parents' friends, for the most part, up until the 80s, were married. So in the 70s, when my parents got divorced, most people were married. 3 years later, it was like I couldn't find a friend with two parents in the household. How did they orchestrate a massive social engineering whereby they had to convince the parents to get divorced, to not give it another try? Whatever happened, it was over. Okay, let's look at it. Well, there's all kinds of agendas that were going on in the 70s. One was to say a woman shouldn't feel like a true woman unless she has a job working for the man, right? Being a mother has no value. You've heard me say this several times. I marathoned MASH with a buddy of mine to study its writing and just to be entertained. Today, it's kind of goofy, but once you start the episodes, you start getting addicted. But I got all the way through it and didn't even realize until I'd finished Cheers right after that and then Frasier after that, what I was seeing was a subtle engineering of something I'd never seen before, because in my household, my father, it was just sort of what was on TV on the few channels that we had. They did reruns of, you know, the Brady Bunch and Leave It to Beaver and My Three Sons and 100 other shows. The Honeymooners, George and Gracie. Everybody's married. Everyone's working through their issues. That's part of the plot. And it was never a situation where you got divorced simply because something bad happened. It gave you moments to build up your character, to be a better husband, to be a better wife, to be a better person, to get through trials together. Well, in MASH, like I've said before, for the hardcore listeners, infidelity was a huge, probably 40% theme of the entire show. Hawkeye, who wasn't married, was getting everyone else who was married to sleep with him, plus some single people. They were his partner swapped out. But then you have, I can't remember the names, but the nurse who's unwed. She is in a perpetual affair with this other guy who's got a wife at home back in America. They're in North Korean War, by the way, or the Korean War, excuse me. Now, Hawkeye's first buddy wasn't married, so it was sort of like two bachelors, and they were both doing the same thing, getting all the nurses to cheat on their husbands or boyfriends or whatever. Not in every case, but a lot of sleeping around. When Hawkeye's buddy quit the show because he thought he was going to be more successful doing movies, sadly he wasn't. His buddy who replaced him, they wrote him as a married, very loyal husband, and he was always turning down opportunities to sleep with people, until one episode he did cross the line and he cheated on his wife. And he felt horrible, but he did it. So we're watching this most popular sitcom at the time on TV. I mean, it was literally the most popular sitcom on TV. Remember, the Jeffersons stayed married, Good Times stayed married. But this little algorithm got inserted and it was super popular, and you're getting endorphins as you're watching. And as every time you laugh, you're getting a splash of chemicals. So as the two are cheating on somebody, boom. I mean, you know, when you participate in someone committing infidelity, you're kind of doing the same thing. I mean, you're enabling the whole situation, unless they've lied to you and said they're single. Okay. Well, if I said to you today, that was MASH back in the 70s and early 80s. If I said to you today, one of my friends on Facebook is cheating on with this woman, you know, he's married, she's married, and they're hooking up, you know, in some hotel or whatever, or maybe they're not even hooking up, but boy, they're letting, you know, they're totally looking the other way in their relationship and sexting or something. Would you be terribly surprised? Not at all. It happens all the time now, right? It's normal. We're desensitized to it and we expect it. If any one of your friends says they're getting a divorce, does that sound surprising to you? Ah, you know, 90% of the time nowadays, I knew it would never last. Mm-hmm. That's why it's a problem. There's the old saying, if you feed it, it grows. Okay. Now let's think of every theme that life has in it, being a seed. I think it would be tough 20 years ago to get what I'm about to say to go down as easy. Maybe 25 years ago, to be honest. But if I said, okay, you watch, you know, you're going to watch a massive amount of pornographic material, videos on the YouTube or VHS tapes back in the day or whatever, and you just watch everything that's out there. We know right away, at least 25 years ago especially, that person's mind is going to get perverse. It is going to get misaligned with the rest of society. And their ability to engage in a happy physical relationship with someone is going to be next to impossible, unless, for whatever reason, the person they married is into the same thing. But even that has its issues, because loyalty becomes really problematic. You know, is it the same people in every single movie you watch? No, it's different people every single time you watch a movie. Okay, well, that means you're supposed to have multiple partners, even if you're married. War used to be something that society understood. You know, one of my grandfathers was in World War II. I don't think either one of them, I don't think anyone in my family was in World War I. But they were alive at the time. All my grandparents were alive during Korean War, during the Vietnam War. And when you start to see the body bags come back, and, you know, I think I might have mentioned this before, but one of my grandmothers was engaged to a guy that went to World War II and died in a plane accident. It was actually a friendly, they had just done a bombing run over Germany, had turned around, and the tips of the wings banged into each other, and that caused one of the planes to split open like an egg, is what his buddy said. And even though he was told to wear his parachute, he didn't want to wear it because they were huge, bulky, and heavy, but his buddy did wear his parachute, and he survived, became a POW for 6 months. And then I guess when the war was over, he came home and told my grandmother what happened, and she lost her fiance and then married my grandfather. So when it comes to that generation knee-jerking into war, which is so strange because they did get into it. They did it for the sake of honor and, you know, our allies, blah, blah, blah. No one understood Vietnam at all. I mean, nobody did. Even the people that went over there, especially came back going, what was all that for? They might have developed hatred towards a group of Vietnamese people than any other scenario. They would have sat down and broke bread together because of the apparatus of war. They had their minds changed. They had, you know, this despair that if we don't stop communism in Vietnam or Korea, it's just going to suddenly pandemic around the world. Give me a break. But every seed of everything that could happen in your life, every valley that you could go down to become a certain thing, you have to be very careful not to feed it. And I think there's a voluntary and an involuntary caution that Marshall McLuhan was getting to, which was, you better be careful what you pick, what you select to, you know, feed inside you, because it will grow. And then the other side is, you better be careful what medium you use to ingest any version of reality, because that's what it is. Because that will plant the seed inside you, and then it will grow. Something you didn't put in yourself personally, but it showed up and it grew. I'm going to tell you, from being an American, you can tell me if you're outside America. My understanding of the Middle East before 1991 was next to nothing. I didn't know. I mean, you know, if someone said Iraq, I'd be like, yeah, not a country over there. Afghanistan, yeah, I know that's a country. Saudi Arabia, is that a country or is that just a group of people? Like, I didn't know. But once the war blows up over there, then all of a sudden, I know personally. Now, obviously, bad stuff has been going on over there. Zygmunt Brzezinski went over there and weaponized the culture over there and got them on a radical version of Islam with infidel passages and Sharia law because he wanted them to be his minions. I've talked in the past about having like a magic machine. And tell me if you've ever had this thought. I mean, seriously. Let me know if you've ever had this thought. A machine that we have, like say, there's a little card that you can push in the front that's got paper. It's made of paper. And there's a pin on the side of the machine. And then there's one button on the top, big blue button on the top. It's a friendly button. And the way the machine works is this. Machine will operate one time. Now, you won't probably have had this exact example, but the effect of the machine is probably what you might have conceived of. The way it works is that you write down a thought, a passage on the card with the pen. Make it as specific as you possibly can, but the card's not too big, so you got to get to the point. You got to think about it for a year before you write it all that way down. Practice it. The way it works is you put the card in the machine and you push the button. And the machine makes every human being on earth have this particular thought for 24 hours. And it's only going to work once. What would you write down on the card that you would want everyone to think? The goal being of the normal sovereign citizens would be a good passage, most likely to get everyone to see that we are all in this together, that we are sovereign beings, that no man's over another man, despite what some people might want you to believe. And the goal would be that your passage would be so clean and so pure and so perfect that it would inject an idea that cannot be erased from any human being. Thus, improving the world, bringing us into a level of peace and serenity that will last throughout the ages, something that we would then teach our children. But even children would have this thought too. Everyone understands. What would you write on the card? But what is that machine doing, technically speaking? It's injecting a little bit of reality into the minds of every human being. That sounds like a magical machine, doesn't it? That machine doesn't exist. Wouldn't it be cool if you could make that machine? Well, you can't make that machine. But you know what's funny? It already exists. It's called a television, a cell phone, computer, maybe a movie theater nowadays, maybe your radio. Definitely printed magazines, printed newspapers for some folks that are old. But now, while I was describing the machine, let me ask you this. Before I told you, well, let's see, after I told you what it does, did you have a quick millisecond thought? Wouldn't it be horrible if they controlled the machine and they put something super bad, some Abramovich fucking passage in there? Wouldn't that have been bad? Some spirit cooking thing, some devil worshiping thing, some human sacrifice thought, how good it is, eating and drinking blood's great sort of thing. Well, they own the machine. And it baffles me that we allow these organizations to still exist. The ratings are going down everywhere. For all that stuff. We prefer to hear from each other instead of pundits. To talk to you like this, right? The broadcast speak. It's the most unbelievable ritual. I used to harp on this a lot in season 1 and 2. And they talk to you like this. Well, so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. It's like a hypnotizing, weird rhythm of speaking. It's fake. And it's right in your face. And that's what broadcast school teaches people. And what's really funny is when I see some of these channels, there's a woman out there who actually has some pretty good content. She's, I believe, in Texas, I think. But she tries to mock that broadcast speak to sound more professional. And it's a naive sort of Luciferian way of talking. And I wish she wouldn't. I wish she would just speak in her normal voice, because there's no way in hell her husband's listening to her dog like that, who she talks about a lot in her videos. But again, she's a good-hearted person. You can tell she's got her heart in the right place. So let's bring it to the modern day time where we are right now and sort of take some inventory of where some of these things go. Now, the easy thing to say is that all of it's bad, and that's probably damn near the truth. I have a concern that it's only recently sort of bubbled up for me personally, because I don't think I was aware of this possibility. And I'm not saying what I'm about to suggest is affecting us the way I'm fearing that it might be affecting us. But I want to highlight this in your mind so that you can take inventory of it in your own soul and see if you want to make a decision whether or not to continue ingesting this kind of material. I'm going to mention the QAnon group for the listener on YouTube that tried to scold me about Q is not a man. He's a group of people. It's like, dude, you don't know. So STFU, you know. But anyway, he communicates that he's multiple people. Actually, he doesn't actually communicate that. He says he's only known by 9 other people. He doesn't quite say that he doesn't have a single voice from a single person. But what have we learned if you have ever just investigated QAnon? You don't have to be a believer. And I'm totally on the fence with this whole thing. He's starting to freak me out a little bit that this is all a huge deep state thing. But I told you about that trick that Hollywood does, which is I made you look. I made you see the season 7, episode 1 of Walking Dead. You know, if you're watching that show and you were totally into it, then that show would have blown your mind. They showed the most gruesome, realistic special effects of bashing people's heads in with a baseball bat with a bunch of spikes on it, killing off 2 of the characters we really liked in the most brutal, savage way possible. It was atrocious. I stopped watching and I've never seen another episode, just out of protest. But we have heard these incredible stories about all this dark, dark stuff that the people who control the world are being accused of doing. Now, it wouldn't surprise me at all that if that is true. It would not surprise me. But have you ever seen anything that you can't unsee that you maybe wish you hadn't seen all the details? Now, if you're like me, you have this sort of, I don't know, maybe it could be described in absolute terms as sort of a cowboy mentality of, okay, we got a bunch of dark people on the planet that run the place. And as dark as their world is, we have to have the ability to deal with their darkness. And let's just say, as an example, the stories I mentioned in a previous episode where kids were being abducted and abused and a bunch of other horrible things that led to their demise. We have to have the constitution as men to go and rescue them. And we can't be so weak that as we go into their world where you might have, you know, a celebrity in there laughing their head off because they've seen it and engaged in it so much, they're covered in a bunch of like body matter and they're just, oh God, this was the greatest day ever. And we go in and we throw up. So we're not very useful. So part of me is like, yeah, some of us have to take the mental hit so that if we ever have the ability to help, communicate about it, whatever, we're not overwhelmed. I just don't know that the entire public needs to hear all that stuff, because it starts to really erode our vision of the universe to the point where if I inject inside your mind with good intentions, and I've done it on this show, telling you about their rituals, their bad stuff, it might be one of these situations where I've dialed in and I've planted the seed given to me by Q, given to me by other folks, and I'm planting it. You know, what is it? David Icke exposed Jimmy Savile, my God, 15, 20 years before he died, and all of his history was revealed. Same with Alex Jones and a bunch of other folks that have been trying to wake people up. And so, don't know. There are Catholic priests and bishops all around the world accused of hundreds per person, child molestation cases and stuff. Well, part of it's kind of like, you could say, I want to know this because I want to know that organization engages in this, protects those guys, ships them all around the world, provides tens of millions of dollars worth of legal services, pays off judges so they get smacked on the hand. What was it? The guy in Australia just got off having done a bunch of horrible stuff. Some of us feel like we need to know. Now, if a guy gets incarcerated, he's found guilty, gets incarcerated, and he's going to live the rest of his life in some, you know, pedo prison or whatever. Maybe I need to know that. Maybe I don't. The guy's been dealt with. Maybe I don't need to know because he was dealt with. Now, if something happens in your local chapter, your local area, and it's the first time you've ever heard of it, but it's been going on all around the world, you know, does it help us find the guy in our local chapter? Because we now are aware that people who have access to kids sometimes inherit predators, like the Boy Scouts has had tons of predators in there. So you can see how complicated it gets. The fine line between the reality, the darkness of reality, and the life we want to live personally. It should be relatively infuriating. I hate to use that word because it might make you feel that way. But to find out that this stuff has been going on. I'm going to share something that I just recently discovered. I think I mentioned it about 10 episodes ago. But we're in the middle of this situation. I think I mentioned in, you know, again, this last couple months, the actress who played the little girl in Poltergeist. Her name is Heather. Now, I saw the movie when I was 12 or something like that. Yeah, 12, 1982. My dad picked me up from school and said, you got to see this movie. Grabbed my buddy and took me to Braintree, Massachusetts, and gave us the money. He said, go in and watch this movie. It was really cool. But I remember seeing that movie and, you know, I watched it, loved it to death. We bought it as soon as it came out on tape, watched another million times. It was great. But then I saw it again as an adult. And for some weird reason, I had this weird concern for her. And I just remember looking at her going, oh my God, you know, it's like, look how vulnerable she is. And as I had learned, what I had learned was that kids get, you know, abused in Hollywood. Now, by the time I had had this thought, she had already passed in the late 80s. She was 7 years old when she was in Poltergeist. I think she was about 12 years old or so by the time she had finished principal footage for Poltergeist 3. So I'm watching this either in the late 90s or early 2000s, and I just had this overwhelming, macabre feeling that, oh my God, you know, someone could do something to her. And I didn't even know, I didn't even realize at the time that she had passed, I don't think. But I came into the lounge about 3 months ago and my buddy's like, you know, did you hear about the Poltergeist girl? And this is like 2020. I'm like, what about her? Isn't she dead? And he said, yeah, well, they're starting to ask questions now that she may have been sexually abused, which led to her death. And so because of the times, I don't have such a problem contemplating that that was potentially true. The details of her death go something like this. She was shooting Poltergeist 3, and which happened in a building, I think. I get 2 and 3 confused. I actually didn't think she was in 3. But she all of a sudden had a real bad stomach pain. And she went home and she had a fever. And she went to the hospital in San Diego with just immediately. They took her right to the hospital. And she died 2 hours into a surgery to fix her colon. When they wrote her death certificate, they said she died of a congenital bowel problem, lower intestinal problem. Her pediatrician slash doctor, because he had grown up with her, said publicly, look, I don't know, because I've dealt with kids with that particular condition that they wrote down on the death certificate. And I've never, ever heard of a kid having a congenital problem that led to death that didn't lead to previous encounters with the problems. And then they went off and got Frank Sinatra's doctor to write a counter article against him saying, oh no, I've totally heard of this before. Okay. The mobster singer's doctor covered for this whole situation. I don't think I need to connect the dots for you. Her problem resembles greatly what could happen to a minor if a grown man were to abuse her. So, you know, recently I had to look. I got exposed to potentially, a real situation that was really, really negative. As far as that feeling I had, I think it was really the result of having my own daughter and then seeing a very vulnerable, you know, kids are just, you know, the most priceless, vulnerable things on planet Earth. To conceive that someone would ever hurt them is a very dark chapter in your life. To hear news of anyone's children being abused and having to contemplate why anyone would ever do such a thing. It's mind-blowing. It's dark. Very dark. I can tell you my own life, having born exactly the year I was born, which is 1969, and then going through the decades that I went through, I could tell that the adults were extremely euphoric by the mid-70s because the Vietnam War had concluded. No one was worried about getting dragged into it. My father managed to go in and get out without getting being sent to combat, which I don't think my father ever would have survived combat, ever. As badass as he was. The 80s, even though they were riddled with some financial issues in my family, still, it was like you could come home and watch some pretty wholesome entertainment. You turn on the stereo and it was like the best music on the planet was coming out. It was great. I moved to California. It was euphoric, absolutely euphoric. Moved to the Bay Area, just a coincidental thing. And everything started getting dark. It wasn't the Bay Area necessarily. It was just music was getting dark. It was really strange when I would go talk to kids, because I was a kid in my 20s. You know, I'm looking at kids again, like I'll repeat like a mantra. Kids in my own family, extremely wealthy, have all the money in the world, going to thrift stores and dressing like bums and literally stealing the best clothing out of those places so that anybody who really needs it goes in and they don't have anything. Then, of course, 9/11 happens and the rest is just history. We lost some rights, some very important constitutional rights as a result of that event, which is what they love to do. They're going to try to take the current crisis of 2020 and they're going to try to squeeze as much out of it as they possibly can, including injecting us with a bunch of poison. I have never before heard, not even back during 9/11, I've never heard before more despair and worry about us going to a police state, as I have heard in the last month in 2020. And when I say those, that statement, it's actually a giant statement from me, which is to say, you know, I woke up around 2005, learned about a bunch of dark stuff. And again, you know, old horses that I don't remotely completely agree with, like David Icke, who's got the reptilian thing, which I think is completely ridiculous, but maybe I'm wrong. And Alex Jones, who is now a slightly different kind of person. I respect them greatly for what they did for me when they did it. You know, it's just like a best friend, you know, they change, right? You know, it's like, well, 10 years ago, I hung out with this guy all the time. And it's not that I dislike him. I just don't hang out with him anymore. I was waking up when no one was awake, roughly speaking, right? And I'm sure some of you had the same exact experience. Some of you were awake a long time ago, way before any of us. And so we're sitting in a world going, oh my God, guys, we have to wake up. Look what's going on. And then you look at the presidents at the time. They were all deep state shills, pre-selected by the Bilderberg group. I mean, it was like a foregone conclusion every year of your life. It wasn't going in a positive direction. Today, I still believe that more positive things are happening than negative things. And I think the number one positive theme of what's going on in the world is that I have never, ever heard and seen so many people aware of our, oh, I should say this, aware of the way the world should be, which is a do no harm, common law mechanism of living. Now, sadly, there are police in every country that seem to be deep state operatives, whether or not they realize it or not. You know, for instance, there's a bunch of churches that tried to celebrate Easter. And if you watch the Corona series, you know, I've mentioned this before. Do I think the state troopers that showed up without masks, writing everybody tickets for not self-quarantining, are literally working for George Soros? No. I just think they're oafy guys. They love the authority. They're a bunch of like Hightower guys. And they're just stupidly violating things because in their brain, it's like, it's all about the rules, man. And so people are being duped into being operatives for the deep state. And some people are very deviously, obviously part of the deep state, which is where you get all your fake news reporters and politicians and what have you, right? So what I'm trying to do indirectly is to say this. Even though we've had a brush with globalism in 2020, like we have never seen in world history, we've never seen anything like this ever. We've had world wars that weren't as tumultuous as this shelter in thing that happened in 2020, ever. Never had this before, where all of our rights seem like they're an option. Your rights aren't an option, right? Common law is not an option. It is the way this world works. It's the way the whole universe has been created, which is why we all feel it in our hearts. Like if I say to you, I can give you a subtle common law thing and you'll knee-jerk a response that's correct, that I can give you, well, let's see, I'll give you a blatant one and then I'll give you a subtle one. The subtle one is you might debate it in your mind. I don't know, you know, maybe we should give up all of our freedoms so we can get more safety, right? If I said, is it ever cool for some random person, put it that way, come into your house when you're not home, especially when you're home, but when you're not home and steal something out of your house of immense value, whether it be just a trinket that has no empirical value to sell anywhere, but it's the trinket your relative gave you and it means something to you, to something like a TV that you just paid $5,000 for, still on your credit card. You would instantaneously, most likely say, hell no, fuck no, it's a horrible idea. But let's say you're listening to all the Corona stuff and they're like, well, we're going to have a vaccine soon. And, you know, you're not going to be allowed to go back to work. Your kids won't be allowed to go to school because the World Health Organization, which is in Europe, is going to say so. there's going to be some people who believe in vaccinations because they've never done any research in it. They've never worked in pharma. Well, yeah, I mean, of course the vaccination. I mean, my God, I mean, what are you talking about? That's like the best thing on planet Earth. And some of you are like, until death do us part, will that thing ever be in my system? I'm making this episode so that we can kind of stop the freight train of life for a split second. You're stopping at a station. It looks like a Disneyland station with Walt Disney greeting you. So you know you're safe. Nothing bad's happened. They haven't taken over his organization and done a bunch of crazy things with it. He's legit, man. Married, 2 kids. It's all good. And he's going to just, you know, talk to you and reestablish what you believe about how the world should work. He's going to play a reflection session to you to say if you say something that seems a little odd, he might make you listen to your own words. As a small digression, I think it's hilarious what Donald Trump did as of the 13th of April, which was technically yesterday. The fake news, for instance, came out and said in every single journal everywhere, as the virus was moving out of China and spreading all over the world, they all called it the China virus, the Wuhan virus, one of the two or both. They said it first. Then, because there's something called a reflection session, which is you go talk to a psychologist and they sit with you. And what they do is you say something to them. And there's two factors of a reflection session. They repeat it to you for two reasons. One, to clarify that they understand what you just said. But two, so you can hear your own voice back. And a lot of people, I had this happen to me when I was 18 years old. One of the guys at my church was a doctor at Pepperdine University in psychology. He did a reflection session to me and found out that I had pent up anger towards my parents for essentially helping me zero when I came to California. Having, you know, all my other relatives being taken care of, including my parents, by their parents. You know, taking care of means co-signing a loan for a car. You know, I didn't take any money for college, but they all had their colleges paid for. And so there was this pent up thing, even though I loved my life, I totally dug my life. I was pissed. And I remember driving home that day, just driving fast all by myself, just exhausting all of that out of myself. And what was strange is by the time I reached home, which was just a couple miles away, it just evaporated out of my system. I finally understood a little PTSD I had, kind of my own anger towards my parents. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't angry anymore. It was like I was reborn, you know? So what Trump has been doing in these sessions at the White House and his stomps and a bunch of other stuff is he plays reflection sessions with the press. And the funny thing is, if he decided to track it, he could burn down every single fake news organization from newspapers to websites to broadcast television and simply chronologically diagram. This is what you said. I said it back to you and I'm a bad guy. This is what you said. I said it back to you. I'm a bad guy. It's a very interesting process. We haven't lost any battles by any means in this world. We are fighting several battles on several fronts. Europe and the EU has their own battle. They've got to get rid of the EU, dissolve all these globalist organizations like the World Health Organization, like the World Trade Organization, like the World Bank. It's all got to go away. Everyone needs to bring back their sovereign money, backed by whatever resources they have. If they've got a single bar of gold, again, Bitcoin proves you don't need more than one bar of gold to back all your money by gold. But every country has a ton of gold, so they're going to be just fine. We have to own our bodies 100%. I think it's phenomenal, you know, these contradictions that you get from individuals. Again, they won't eat a cow with eyeballs, but they'll kill a human being inside their womb with eyeballs. They won't let anyone tell them what they can do with their body, including the human being that lives inside them. But they don't have any problem telling you you have to take a vaccination. These are contradictory things, cognitive dissonance at a maximum level. We need to repeat these things to people so that they have a leg to stand on. Again, one of the interesting things you can do in the United States, which I find amazing that it's still there and it still works, is that religious freedoms can actually make you immune from a ton of things. You can actually get out of going to war by citing that your religion doesn't allow you to do it. They might put you in jail, like, what is it, Cassius Clay. But you can get out of, like, the Amish can get rid of, can get out of any vaccinations because they say we don't believe in medicine. But you have to be a part of those organizations before you can win in court, right? And so it's phenomenal that there are loopholes that work still. And yet you got Bill Gates walking around saying that, you know, he's going to microchip everybody and destroy your genetics with a vaccination. And I want to make a, this is not exactly the most appropriate place to put this point in here, but we're kind of hovering around the crisis of 2020, at least I am in this conversation. I want to remind you all, this is a little tidbit you can repeat to people. Anything that naturally occurs in this world technically can't be patented. Now, biotech has a little exception, which is ludicrous, that they're trying to patent sequences of your DNA, which is absurd. One, your protein patterns are really what dictate your DNA anyway, so the whole theory is ridiculous. But they can't patent vitamin C. They can't patent an herb that gets rid of erectile dysfunction. So what they do is they demonize through the World Trade Organization all vitamins and minerals that keep you healthy. Those are now deemed toxins, while pesticides, up to 176 of them, are legal to put in your food, most of them at toxic levels, meaning toxicology departments determine how much you can have of a poison before it's going to affect you medically, and the World Trade Organization has got them all jacked up over the lethal levels. Some by a little, some by a lot. We have heard, and it's quite true, that there are patents out there for the coronavirus. Well, the coronavirus in its natural state could not be patented because it is just an organic thing that occurs in society, like all the 360 plus versions of influenza. It just happens. It's in birds and humans and everything. So in order for something to have been patented, it has to have been synthesized, which is another convenient way of using the word weaponized. So the fact that some of these things, if they ever become patented, you are guaranteed that they have been manipulated, most likely in a BSL-4 lab, biosafety level 4 lab, which is the currently, as far as disclosed laboratories, it's the highest volatility laboratory on planet Earth. They make the deadliest stuff known to man. Now, there may be a level 5 somewhere we don't know about. But let me just tell you, you don't need to get any worse than BSL-4 to wipe out the entire planet. The nice thing is, and the good news is, if you're feeling any anxiety about what's going on, one, check yourself. Check all the things that you don't need to know. Like Prince said, turn the TV off, turn the news off. These problems aren't for you. And stop feeding those seeds inside your soul, especially if they're giving you anxiety. I'm going to suggest you shut it off. You leave the battlefront for a little while. You're no longer going to be on the front line, and that's just fine. You can participate in the back. And you know one way you can participate in the back that seems perhaps illogical for some people is just make the world a happy place. So many of you, if not every single one of you, I'm willing to bet every single one of you, you have something charming about you, something that's funny. You got a good sense of humor. And as sense of humors vary between people, you just throw a bunch of stuff up in your social media that just makes people laugh. Maybe you just cut social media completely off because it has too much acidic stuff in it. And so you interact with society. You put on a big smile. You go through the drive-thru and the poor kid that's fearing perhaps catching something, you know, the other day I was buying a burrito at one of my favorite places here in California. It's one step above fast food because it's owned by a family and they really use some amazing ingredients. It's great. But I decided to tell the kid because he had taken my money and he was waiting for my food to get finished before he's going to give it to me. But as soon as he flipped the door open, the little window, I committed to telling the kid, you know, thanks for working. Thanks for, you know, staying open, I think is what I said. The funny thing was, is that he had already grabbed a coupon for a free burrito, which is like, you know, $9 what this place is. So I'm saying this and I surprised him. I could see it on his face. He was like, no one had said it to him all day long. It's kind of what it looked like, right? He goes, he smiles and he goes, well, you want a free burrito? He already had it in his hand, but he was just like, thank you with the coupon. Both of us had this positive moment. I hope I brightened his day. He certainly brightened my day. Plus, you know, I have to say, I mentioned this. This is a random little factoid. I'd almost like to hear your experience in this particular area, just as a wild information transfer between, especially if you're in a different country, but even if you're all around the United States. I grew up in the Midwest where kids are raised to be extremely respectful because it's a little tiny town, right? You know, and if you act like a dick, everyone knows. Okay. But when I came to the city, the fast food helpers for at least a couple decades, they were like these entitled, cantankerous kids. You know, it was like, yeah, you want your money. It was like your order's all wrong and the food composition's really bad. Over the last, but I have to say, it even happened in Huntington Beach when I moved here 17 years ago. Lately, for probably, I don't even know when this transformed, but especially over, I'd say, at least the last 3 years, wherever I go in Orange County, the kids are so freaking nice within the fast food industry. And they're all shapes, sizes, colors, and everything. I mean, it's just like, it's there's no one thing. And so I mentioned it to a friend of mine who lives here locally. I said, you know, have you noticed the kids have been really nice? And she was like, yeah, totally. You know, let's compare notes on that one. But again, I just want to leave you with the notion that hope is probably a fake thing. We're actually taking action. We're communicating with each other. Keep doing it. Brighten the world. You don't always have to be on the front line. Protect your brain. Protect what goes in there. Protect what you feed because it grows. And this is going from acidic news down to maybe a fetish you got off on the side that ain't good for you, you know. There's, you know, I'll give an example too. Because we're locked in, there's been this news article that keeps going around, but I mean, I've got friends in all kinds of different places. I don't know if people are hiding this from me, but they're talking about alcoholism getting out of control during the lockdown. And I have to say, you know, I know some friends that have definitely had a few saucy nights, but it's because they have chat sessions with all their friends. Like, I know a girl that has routine every week, all the girls get together and they have this like drinking party through the computer. But this girl is getting totally wasted. And so then she's out the next day. And so when I talked to her, it's like, she's like, oh, I tied one on last night, you know? And it's like, if that's not your normal behavior, I want to be careful with some of that stuff. We all have our own demons. So no one's better than anybody else. Okay. But, you know, I take inventory every once in a while, but I'm making this episode because even I forget that that's important to check yourself. You know, I know you feel me. I know I'm going in circles. Hopefully this was useful. Give me your thoughts, man. I'm not trying to bait you into comments. Just, you know, your wisdom can be my wisdom if you share it, which is great. For those of you who have not gone to deepthoughtsradio.com, please know that that's the hub. If anything ever happens to the show in terms of massive censorship or whatever, you know, YouTube's been pretty kind to us and all of our crazy things. That you just go to the website and bookmark it and leave it in your bookmark somewhere. You don't have to go back to it unless the show disappears. But it has 2 video, 2 audio, 4 social media, a couple ways to donate, but don't worry about it. It has a store and it has season 1 and a different channel because I remastered everything. So if you're new to the channel, that's where you can find that. Please subscribe if you dig this. Thumb it up if you dig it too, but only if you dig it. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.